morning, Woodson against Pfizer. Mr. Roche.
Morning. May it please the court, my name is Edward Roche. I represent the appellant, Rose Woodson. There's one point that I'd like to start out with, and that is the point that is raised for the first time by Pfizer that Ms. Woodson's claim was time-barred. This was not raised in the trial court. The argument is that the contract, her employment contract, was signed in January of 1999, and therefore the time ran 2 years from that date. The fact is the contract was entered into at that time, January 5th, 1999. However, it terminated on June 3 of 1999. The complaint was filed well in advance of 2 years from the termination date, which was December 20, 2000.
That's the filing date. Should Pfizer has waived this point?
Yes, absolutely. It was never raised. Okay. And there's no factual basis, and I think it's just plain wrong, even if it is not waived.
Okay.
And the other factual underpinning that I think is not supported by anything in the record is that Ms. Woodson knew about the segregated marketing at the time that she entered into the employment contract. The contract, which is part of the record, is silent about the segregated marketing, or what I refer to as the segregated marketing.
Yeah,
and there's nothing else that...
It's a geographical form of segregation, right? It's not like you're told if at address number one in your territory there's a Caucasian person, and address number two there's an African-American person, you can only go to address number two. It's just that the demographics of these markets have a predominantly minority population, right?
Correct, correct.
Well, so, and where is it written that companies like Phoenix need to market to customers who reflect, let's say, the demographics of a wider metropolitan area or the country or something?
In the law, I assume is what you're
referring
to, in the law. Well, there's nothing
explicitly... That would be what we're trying to do here.
right. There's nothing explicitly written in the law that they must do that. The prohibition, of course, is Section 1981 that says you cannot prohibit contract formation based on race.
But why, if they are allowing contract formation in every market that they have chosen to serve, why are they violating Section 1981 because they're not serving an adjacent market or a further market?
Because it's based on race and the race of Ms.
Woodson. But you are then arguing that 1981 requires all companies to serve some set of markets that will mirror, I'll say, perhaps the national demographics, that a company can't say, we're just going to be a local company and we're going to market in the following geographic area that corresponds, say, to the south side of Chicago.
I can appreciate the size of a company determining what its market outreach can be, but here, and I point specifically to Mr. Foster's affidavit, where there are explicit and quite adamant statements to the effect that we're not going into white communities because we won't go into a community that has no interest in our in minorities. I mean,
so
there is there's a racial assumption there,
right,
that automatically limits what Ms. Woodson and others are going to be able to do. And they didn't submit any findings that said, you know, we can't compete
or
anything
that.
Like that. It's just this blanket policy.
So in your view, it would also violate the law for let's say a small firm of investment advisors to decide that they were going to target a female audience on the theory that women have been underserved in the investment advisor business, and they really aren't, you know, if a man comes along, you know, they'll serve him, but all their marketing, all their everything is addressed to homemakers. That's unlawful in your view, because they have explicitly, on the basis of gender, decided to target a certain audience.
Yes, though I would also say that there's no evidence in this record, that there is an underserving problem. And if there is an underserving problem, the resources of a Pfizer would better address that. Certainly, if there's a resource problem with getting to a segment of the population, why isn't Pfizer doing that itself, as opposed to shoving that off and also limiting Phoenix's potential as well? You're black, you go to the blacks.
But
we're
Phoenix
white.
Isn't complaining.
I'm sorry,
Phoenix isn't
Phoenix
complaining.
Phoenix doesn't seem to be complaining in this
if
case.
If Phoenix
anyway.
Had applied to represent Pfizer in other territories and Pfizer had turned it down, then there would be an interesting case, although it would
sure.
be a case that had to be filed by Phoenix, not
right.
by your client.
It's a collateral point, granted, and they don't make that complaint. They are as complicitous in the segregation as is Pfizer, and that's what the 1985 claim, of course, is.
Let me follow up my colleague's question.
Sure.
Suppose a new law firm that has, say, quite a few black partners decides that it will target corporations that are largely owned by blacks and recruit them as clients. Could a young associate at that law firm sue the law firm under 1981 and say, this is limiting my opportunities to represent white clients because the partners at this firm are targeting companies that are owned and operated by blacks?
And they
therefore,
chose.
That violates my legal rights. The partner's choice of what clients to target violates my legal rights.
Yes.
And on what basis?
Because
how does that
limit
the associate's right to contract?
Well,
at every law firm, the associate gets to work on the clients the partners bring in.
Okay.
Right. So if you're talking about limiting contract rights, you might as well say, I've gone to work at Cravath, Swain & Moore. Cravath does not work for General Motors. I really wanted to do work for General Motors. This violates my contract rights because I can't do any General Motors work here at Cravath. What's the difference?
Well, I'm not sure that there's a contractual relationship at all between that associate and the client. Ms. Woodson
But here you're suing both the employer and the employer's client.
But Ms. Woodson was making contracts with individual doctors, with individual consumers. The associate is not making contracts. He's performing work. If your inquiry is on the contractual nature of the relationship, or at least that's what I understand your inquiry to be on, if I'm missing that,
look,
then
the 1981 action is based on your client's right to contract.
Yes.
Not on supposed right to contract between somebody who might buy drugs from Pfizer. They're not the plaintiffs. The only right to contract is your client's right to a contractual relation with her employer or with Pfizer. Your client has no contractual relation with Pfizer and doesn't want one, so I don't understand that.
I disagree. Her right is based on the potential contracts between her and other doctors, which she's been prohibited from entering into sales agreements with.
No, I'm completely lost.
She goes to the
associate at Cravath will be told that he cannot contract with General Motors. It's just not allowed.
Okay.
If he signs some side contract with General Motors, he'll be fired just like that.
Right, but part of her job is to sign up doctors. She is hired by Phoenix to go out into the marketplace
and sign up
doctors to take samples.
In the employer's territory, but she's not signing those contracts with her. She's signing the contracts with a third party. She's an agent in that process.
Correct.
Not a party to the contract. The only party to a contract that she wants to have is a contract with her employer.
But she's also instrumental. What her advancement and bonuses and so forth depend on are the contracts that she forms with doctors on behalf.
I'm completely out in the legal wilderness. What does Section 1981 have to do with a claim that you wish to be an agent in helping A sign a contract with B? I'd always thought of 1981 as a case in which you had a right, the plaintiff was claiming a right to contract with somebody else. I'd never understood 1981 to have to do with an agency relation in which the plaintiff wishes to be an agent in an A-B contract. Are there any cases that you're relying on for the proposition that wishing to be an agent in a contract between third parties is something covered by 1981 at all?
In Vaccaria, in headnotes 8, 9, and 10.
Don't talk to me about headnotes for heaven's
sake. Well, no, I'm just directing. I'm not quoting the headnote. I'm just directing to that part of the opinion from the printout that I have. But in the body of the opinion, Your Honor, under this analysis, the relationship between the plaintiff and the third-party interferer is irrelevant. As long as the interfering prevents or impedes the formation of a contract, it is covered by Section 1981.
This is a district court opinion of authority?
Yes, it's Judge Moran's opinion at 765,
right.
S up 461, and the briefs discuss it. But that is the, I'm sorry, I don't have the specific page number of that quote, but the headnote that it correlates to are 8, 9, and 10.
Okay, I think we have your position. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry for the confusion, Judge.
Ms. Haney.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. At the outset, may I correct this waiver argument? I did raise in the trial court the statute of limitations argument, but in candor, I did it on the reply brief. If that constitutes waiver, then it does, but I wasn't sure if it did, and so obviously I wanted to preserve it here. Also, in the Vaccaria case, Vaccaria was an independent contractor, so that case was totally inapplicable to what we're arguing here. Here, of course, as was pointed out, Woodson was not making contracts with the customers. Another item which I want to point out is that there's been some assumption that Pfizer has virtually all white employees. There's nothing in the record to support that. Also, there's been an assumption that Pfizer markets to virtually all white markets. There's nothing in the record to support that.
So basically, as I understand it, the theory that the plaintiffs are assessing is that there is an agreement, if you will, between Pfizer and Phoenix that allocates the potential minority customers of Pfizer products to Phoenix and the potential non-minority or Caucasian or white, whatever we want to call them, customers to Pfizer. And you're saying, A, there's nothing in the record about that.
Correct.
But if there were such a case, does that strike you as something that would be legal? Who would be able to sue for that?
Well, certainly in this case, it would not be the plaintiff. It would be a white person who would be able to sue. Well, are you saying to market or to
employ? Well, if there were an agreement between Phoenix and Pfizer to divide the market on racial grounds, on racial criteria, that does seem to be against something, right? To say, we're going to let you have our minority customers and we'll take the white ones. Who would have standing to bring a lawsuit to complain about that?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I don't see what statute that would violate. It certainly wouldn't violate Section 1981.
Certainly it would. Lawsuits certainly could be filed by somebody who wanted to solicit white customers and Pfizer was not entering into contracts with it for that agency business. So if here the firm of solicitors wanted to engage in some suburban business and Pfizer said, yes, but we've segregated by race, too bad, that'd be about as clean a 1981 suit as you could imagine. The question would then be, could anybody sue if the firm of solicitors was happy with the outcome, if everybody would, other than, say, the employees?
Your Honor, in that scenario, the person who would have the lawsuit would be the person who wanted to hire that law firm, not sort of the reverse situation which we have here, if I understand your scenario. I think I've already run out of time. Yeah, is there any
not,
other...
Not according to our count.
Not until you're on red, but if you had any other point you wanted to make.
I did want to make one point, if I could. Section 1981 prohibits the African Americans from being treated different from whites with respect to the making and enforcement of contracts. It does not entitle African Americans to work in sales territories that are predominantly white, especially whereas here Woodson hasn't pointed to any similarly situated white. And in fact, Woodson's admission that the workforce of Phoenix was all African American, I feel, dooms her claim. She cannot possibly make out a case for discrimination because she doesn't have any similarly situated white to compare herself to. That's I have. Oh, I have mm-hmm. what you have.
Thank you, Ms. Haney.
Thank you.
Mr. Sherman.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Jonathan Sherman on behalf of Phoenix Pharmaceuticals. Your Honors, in addition to the points raised by Ms. Haney, I would add that with respect to Phoenix, the only issue is whether or not Ms. Woodson is entitled to proceed to a jury trial based on a record which did not reveal any material dispute as to the fact that Phoenix had and has a legitimate non-discriminatory reason to do business as it does. I believe we can all agree that in order to prevail on a 1981 claim, the plaintiff must show that she was the victim of intentional discrimination. The district judge pointed out that there is no allegation, even in the complaint, that this particular plaintiff was discriminated against based on her race. Even, however, if you assume that there is some modicum of evidence to that effect in the record, then we proceed to the burden-shifting analysis, and we have the undisputed evidence in the Foster affidavit that it was Phoenix's decision for altruistic reasons to do business in minority communities, to develop those communities, and to return funds to those communities in the form of scholarships and otherwise. This court pointed out, I believe, in the Carson case that we may disagree with whether a business decision is appropriate or not, but that is not the substance of a 1981 analysis. As long as there is a legitimate non-discriminatory reason, the plaintiff cannot proceed to trial. And there is no dispute that Phoenix has this reason. I would also point out that there is no allegation in the complaint that Ms. Woodson was denied a contract interest relating to herself. As has been discussed, the Vicaria case talks about a woman who was an independent contractor, and there was, incidentally, in that case, additional evidence recognized by the court that she had been the subject of discrimination based on a number of protected reasons, her gender, her national origin, race, and so on. Ms. Woodson cannot get past that hurdle. And also, she cannot get around the fact, as was pointed out, I believe, by Judge Easterbrook, that she would have been entering into contracts not on behalf of herself, but on behalf of her employer. The central issue in this case, as in other 1981 cases, is whether the employer would have taken the same action had the employee been of a different status. Clearly, in this case, given the Foster affidavit, Phoenix would have proceeded just as it did proceed. And for all of those reasons, I would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. Our next case is United States against Horn.